Warning, you are about to listen to the greatest radio show ever. And due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. 3, 2, 1. Now live from the Devil Radio Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning. Welcome to the Devil's Advocate Show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
Here is your host, Mike Crute.
Merry New Year! Welcome to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. How you doing, Dominic?
Crudy, happy 2023 to you, Evan, on the board, our fair audience. Hope we all made it through just fine. Good to be with y'all.
Dominic, we got a fine guest joining me in studio very soon. Wisconsin Supreme Court candidate, Judge Everett Mitchell, about 4:30. So you're going to want to stick around for that. And Dom, we got lots to talk about today, but I'd like to start with a little story. You know, my wife's on the road right now. She's up in Green Bay, up in Titletown, if you will. You know, the Packer fans have all rolled out, and she rolled up to get our new office ready. You know, we're going to launch a new station up there shortly.
Nice.
A couple days to a week. We'll get back to you. But she's getting the office ready. And my son is up there with her, as is apparently the dog, one of the dogs. Which I actually favor, the fact that the dog is going with mama. You know, that's a good thing. But they get to the hotel room, and she's quite impressed. She's like, oh, I was being budget conscious, but this is a great room. And I can only imagine my, you know, college kid home from college, who somehow got suckered into this, going to the bedroom and claiming, that one's mine. I'll take the master. And that's not the way it works, but that's not there. I don't care if my wife gives up the master bedroom. But I got to tell you, when Kevin McCarthy goes to the speaker's office and has the temerity, Dom, the brass ones, to start moving in, they haven't even had a vote. And he's moving into the speaker's suite.
McCarthy is feeling very, very confident. Fake it till you make it. Speaker McCarthy.
Well, I don't abide by my kids stealing the good room. Here is how it's being reported, just briefly. Rep. Kevin McCarthy, Republican from California, is so confident that he'll be the next Speaker of the House that he's already moving his belongings into the Speaker suite, according to a report. Someone should, you know, call the Capitol Police and say he's trespassing. Newsmax congressional correspondent Logan Rattick broke the news to host Bob Sellers on Monday. I don't often quote the Newsy Max, but in this case, I'm gonna consider this a credible source. We do know that Kevin McCarthy is moving all of his belongings into the speaker suite, but if he loses, it is not eventually the Speaker of the House. He'll have to move all that stuff out, Rattick reported from the House. Sellers noted that would be embarrassing. Not Dom if he takes the Trump tact and refuses to vacate the speaker suite.
He's just going to squat the speaker's office no matter what happens on the vote tomorrow.
That was Trump's plan ultimately in the White House.
You guys, listen, I'm already here. All stuff's already moved in. It may as well just be me.
Do you think it's his plan, Dom, to occupy the speaker suite until they elect him? Sort of hold it hostage, you know? I mean, as soon as they've got a speaker, Republicans are going to hold the governance of the entire nation hostage. Why not get an early start? Sort of a
I mean, I think that's kind of what they're doing, Crudy. But I've seen different reporting. There's going to be a round two of voting. You know, some of these five GOP wackadoodles that are from the Freedom Caucus, they're standing up, they're standing firm, Crudy. They're not going to vote. They don't want Kevin McCarthy, and they promise that they'll have a second name on the second ballot.
That's intriguing. You broke that to me just a little bit before we went on the air. Dom, I'd like to share some sound with you. If we could, Ebone, going to need your help on this one. Let's start with cut number 13. See if you can guess the source.
Hello, everybody. Happy New Year. Hopefully it'll be a great year for everybody, including yourselves. And I hope you enjoy yourselves at Mar-a-Lago.
You know who's not going to have a great year in 2023? Donald Trump.
I suspect for a change you might be right, Tom. Donald Trump did a little New Year's Eve press missive.
What?
Because everyone was wondering what Trump was doing for New Year's Eve. And he, you know, open press, he claimed. Although I did hear once the question started flying about January 6th, I understood he walked away from the reporters at Mar-a-Lago. But let's share a little of the sound of the, you know, former president while he's, you know, on the right
side. The only declared 2024 GOP presidential candidate, Donald Trump.
He's your front runner. Played for the people. Cut number 10, a New Year's Eve party, and he's feeling good about that campaign. Cut 10.
I think we're doing really well. I saw poll numbers just today that were fantastic, and I think we're going to do well. We're going to make America great again. Very simple.
What, didn't you already do that? Why do you got to keep on doing it? I thought you were going to keep America great. But he made America great. Now he lost, so now he's going to make America great again. Make America greater.
Who's doing polling right now? What polling is he seeing?
He asked Melania what she thought, and she said, okay, I'd vote for you. And that's pretty good, right? Come on, man. This guy has...
But you know how people lie to pollsters?
Since he's made his declaration for the 2024 GOP candidacy, he hasn't gone on the road. He hasn't held a rally. He hasn't done any. Oh, he did do some things. He released those really cool cards. Did you get your card? Did you send one? Did anyone get you one for Christmas? No. I heard they sold out.
No, but I've been reading all about his taxes. Perhaps the next criminal front that Donald Trump will face.
Right.
There's a lot of, let's just say, alleged criminality contained in those 6 years of taxes. And that's why, primarily, that's why he was the president. More from Donald Trump. Cut 11? Are we past 11 or just up to 11? Play 11.
We have to have a strong border, very importantly. We have to have a strong border. We have to have it now. Our country is being very gravely hurt. And we have to bring back the economy. We have to get rid of inflation. It's destroying our country.
And Mexico is going to pay for it.
Bring back the economy. I mean, the economy tanked under Donald Trump, and it's back. Yes, inflation has peaked, and now we're on our way down, thankfully. Not because of anything any Republicans have done about it.
A little bit more from Donald Trump's big New Year's Eve bonanza. Him and Ryan Seacrest, they can really throw a party. Cut number 12, please. Ukraine.
We should have never been involved with a certain war that's taking place right now that's really hurting killing a lot of people, but hurting a lot of countries, and hopefully that'll get straightened out very quickly.
Well, a certain war? Which war is he talking about?
And all we're really doing, as near as I can tell, is sending aid and armaments. It's not like we've got boots on the ground in the Ukraine, and last time I checked, your buddy Putin is the guy that invaded, right? You'd have been kosher with that. You know, just some aggressive land development on the other side.
He's a developer. He's a builder. That's what he does. He's creating jobs.
Well, it's creative destruction when he does it, Dom. You know, he's clearing the way. There'll be no gentrification here.
No.
One last one. Trump comments on the January 6th and, you know, perhaps what's coming next. The Department of Justice. Play it for the people. Cut number 14.
I think it's a disgrace what's happened with the FBI and with the weaponization of justice. There's never been anything like this, and it is disgraceful.
You're probably right. There's never been anyone as guilty as you have been, Donald Trump, in this role as the president. And I got one more story I'd like to throw out here in the lead before we get a fine guest coming at 4:30 again. Supreme Court candidate, Wisconsin Supreme Court, Judge Everett Mitchell, joining me in the world headquarters, the Solidarity Realty Studios. But a headline here I found over at CNN. Hope Hicks, the former fashion model turned Trumpster. This made us all unemployable. Trump White House aides respond to January 6th in angry text exchange. This apparently from the testimony of Hope Hicks, but I'll read from the article. A text exchange between Ivanka Trump's chief of staff, Julie Radford, and White House aide Hope Hicks reveals their anger over then-President Donald Trump's actions on January 6, 2021, hurting them professionally, according to a newly released document collected by the House Select Committee investigating the Capitol Hill insurrection. Here's the quote from Hope Hicks. In one day, he ended every future opportunity that doesn't include speaking engagements at the local Proud Boys chapter. And all of us that didn't have jobs lined up will be perpetually unemployed. I'm so mad and upset. We all look like domestic terrorists now.
Yes. Yes, you do, Hope.
A little bit more from Hope Hicks, again, via text. This made us all unemployable, like untouchable. God, I'm so effing mad. Radford responded by texting, I know, like there isn't a chance of finding a job, and indicating she'd already lost a job opportunity from Visa, which sent her a blow-off email. Maybe it was, you know, the whole guilt by association thing. Obviously, there's been more documents released, an 845-page report, and more about the Hope Hicks text messages. In the text messages, Hicks then says, Alyssa looks like a genius, an apparent reference to Alyssa Farah Griffin resigning from her post at the White House aide one month before the attack on the U.S. Capitol. Hicks and Radford then discuss Jared Kushner and Ivanka Trump's in-law, Carly Kloss, the supermodel, tweeting that Trump's response to the election was anti-American. Unreal, Radford texted. Well, A, who cares what a supermodel thinks? But B, wasn't that all of our response to the January 6th time? Yes. Were you worried?
He made us all unemployable. We look like domestic terrorists. You know, if it smells like a domestic terrorist and it acts like a domestic terrorist and it looks like a domestic terrorist, it might just be a domestic terrorist.
Come back. We are the Devil's Advocates. Merry New Year.
This bloodshed must end. This bloodshed will end.
The Devil's Advocates. Never personal. Only politics.
And we are back from the 420 break. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Phone lines are open. We'll take your calls at 844-967-2789. But do it now. We have Judge Everett Mitchell joining us at 430.
Dominic, some would describe us as besties. And I'd have to admit, you're at least in my top three best friends.
At least. I'm sure of it.
Actually, who's kidding who here, man? You're number one in my heart.
All right, baby. Back at you, Crudy.
But I got to tell you, buddy, since the election of 2020, outside of this fine radio product we do together each and every day, we collaborate on the radio, but we don't call each other as much as we used to. In fact, I don't think you've called me as many times as Donald Trump has called Robin Voss. Speaker of the Wisconsin Assembly, Republican leader Robin Voss, received, according to the January 6th transcripts, at least 10 phone calls from Trump after the 2020 election. Some might call it a pressure campaign. I call it just besties being besties. Assembly Speaker Robin Voss and former President Donald Trump spoke by phone 10 times in 2 years following the 2020 presidential election, as Trump and his allies launched a baseless effort to persuade legislative leaders in battleground states where he lost to sow doubt or overturn the election result. And in testimony to the U.S. House Committee investigating the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol, Voss said Trump did not explicitly tell him to take action to overturn the results of the 2020 presidential in Wisconsin, but suggested it was implied in the conversations he and Trump had between August 2021 and July of 2022. Again, this is, what,
6 months ago?
After the election until like 6 months ago. The committee, which wrapped up its investigation in recent weeks, released a transcript of Voss' November 30th interview late Friday. Here is a quote. I think he believed that potentially we could go back and do something about the 2020 election. He didn't say it again specifically. I only know that from media reports, but that was the implication that if enough fraud was found, perhaps something different could happen. My general impression, if I recall correctly, was the idea was we need to discover and find the fraud. I think he believed quite adamantly that fraud had occurred. Well, you're the guy that was helping to stir that belief, right?
Right, dude. Crudy, a little bit more here from the reporting at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Molly Beck, the journalist, Voss told committee investigators much of the conversation with Trump most likely focused on politics, golf, and things like that. On occasion, Trump would bring up the 2020 election, Voss testified. You now have all the evidence that you need to fix what happens, Voss said Trump told him at one point. I said Trump
fix
did
it.
Not elaborate. He said Trump did not elaborate on what the something was that he wanted me to do, and I did not know specifically what action he was discussing that the president wanted the legislature to take. I informed President Trump that under the Constitution, there was nothing we could do.
Dom, I want to jump ahead here just a little bit because we've got some sound of Robin Voss. He went on the Sunday shows, not under oath, mind you, not like he was before the January 6th committee. But I would point out, Voss launched the review, you know, the Gableman review, in the summer of 2021, just hours after Trump launched his final verbal attack against the legislative leaders for not litigating the results of the 2020 election, like the battleground state of Arizona, despite a lack of evidence supporting a problematic election result. And just before Wisconsin's annual Republican convention in June, Trump issued a statement accusing Voss and other GOP leaders of working hard to cover up election corruption. Don't fall for their lies. These Republican leaders need to step up and support the people who elected them by providing them a full forensic investigation. If they don't, I have little doubt that they will be primaried and quickly run out of office, Trump said in his statement.
Crudy, real quick, I just, you misspoke here. I mean, Voss launched the review in the summer of 21, just hours after Trump launched his first verbal assault against the legislative leaders. So as soon as Trump went ballistic on these guys, Trump ran to Gableman to get this thing going.
Well, let's play some of the Robin Voss. Let's let him speak for himself, Dom, because, yeah, we'd hate to miss out. Robin Voss talking first and foremost about Assembly Elections Chairperson Janelle Branchon recently stripped of her caucus privileges. Cut one.
Janelle had a habit, instead of focusing on what we could get done, she focused on things that clearly were outside our purview, thinking that we were going to overturn the election when that's clearly unconstitutional, thinking that we were somehow going to, you know, go back and relitigate 2020. That made her unfit and unqualified.
But Gableman, he was super cool with Gableman. Voss on Donald Trump pressuring him. Cut two.
Former President Trump also pressured you to overturn the election.
Yeah, he did.
What was it like?
But I beat him.
But I beat him? What?
More from Voss. Cut number three, please.
Well, I hope it shows people that I'm willing to stand up for what I believe in, no matter how high or intense the political pressure is. Look, I think there were problems with the 2020 election.
Larky.
It should have been done differently. We should have reformed it. It didn't happen because of the election. But I'm not going to go back and spend all of my time living in the past. And I feel like that's where some people are.
Did Trump commit crimes? Cut four.
I have no idea. I mean, I do think the January 6th commission is a big witch trial. I mean, you know, they didn't really
what?
Do very much other than try to make it into a political circus. And I guess it goes right back to what I said earlier, that people are tired. They're tired of everything being political.
They're tired of you, Robin Voss. Adam Steen almost beat your ass because, Donald Trump supported him. You only survived a primary by 260 votes. And I can tell you what I am frustrated by is the fact that this man, who was the recipient of the pressure campaign from the former president that triggered the Gableman investigation, the committee assignment of Janelle Branchon, he allowed this crap to go on the taxpayer dime for over a year. And then when it stopped serving his purpose, when they primaried his ass too, because he wasn't buying in the decertification of the former election, then, and only then, he threw his bestie Donald Trump overboard. Sounds real brave these days. But he can't even call a crime a crime. You were the victim of a crime. Where did the bad man touch you? Come back, a fine guest, Judge Everett Mitchell, Wisconsin Supreme Court candidate.
Have fun storming the castle.
No big deal.
Charged, never convicted. The Devil's Advocates.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Dominic, I welcome back a fine guest to the Madison Studios. He is the Honorable Judge Everett Mitchell. He is a Wisconsin Supreme Court candidate, and apparently he didn't like Ebone's march up music, man. Like, we're going to the People's
good.
Court.
It just brought the People's Court. That's what people want to see, the People's Court. What is the People's Court?
Judge Everett Mitchell, welcome back to the Devil's Advocates. Merry New Year, as I like to say. Game on, man. The election Friday is 45 days from the primary. The primary is February 21st. And I like to joke, this is the most important election of 2023, but it absolutely is. The balance of the Wisconsin Supreme Court is in the balance. And Everett, why should you be the standard bearer for the left?
Well, as I've said to many groups before, I believe our state deserves a justice that reflects the diversity and ideas of our entire state. That I'm running on the idea that justice is not what you say. Justice is what you do. And what the left needs right now is a champion who has fought for the issues that our community fights for, that has a proven track record of fight for all Wisconsinites, making sure that public safety is done a certain way. This idea of just locking people up and then throwing away the key has not led us to public safety. But the reforms that we put in place here in Dane County has led to a reduction of almost 40% in juvenile car thefts. We haven't had a juvenile car theft referral in November or December.
Wow.
Because we've been working with our law enforcement partners and our community partners to give youth an option. I say all the time that I'm not going to tout about how many people are locked up. I'm going to talk about how many futures I've saved, how many victims had to been protected because we didn't do those things and didn't need to give people and give young people an option. So I think the idea of the left is reminding people that we not only need someone who's going to fight for the values that are important for Wisconsinites, but who also will provide the leadership in our communities to give our communities a different direction in which to continue to move toward our progressive values.
Everett, before we came on the air, and I'm not trying to expose a private conversation, but we talked about some of, you know, the political establishment, if you will. And some of the political establishments lining up against one of your, lining up in support of one of your primary opponents. And you told me last time you ran for office, people discouraged your run, said you're not going to raise the money, you're not going to be the right candidate. Yet here you are. You won that race. So
twice. I won twice.
Well, let me ask you. You are not probably the political establishment's choice, but you're here in the city of Madison where we've got a lot of Democratic voters. And to get through the primary, that's the most important thing at this stage. Everett, how do you convince people, not the political class, but the voting class, the citizens of the state, how do you convince them that you're the right guy?
I think, you know, I've been around this entire state, including our own community. I think in our community, we demonstrate that you can be a judge who's committed to overall great things and still have great success. And then secondly, be able to say that this is not just a, should not be just a Madison Milwaukee race. It should be an entire state race. It should be a ability to bring together rural and urban together to excite them about the values that are important to us. And that's what I've been able to do. The ability also, secondly, to bring new voters to the polls that have not voted before. You know, this idea that's still hanging out there among some of the elites is that, well, if Mandela didn't win, can an African-American win a statewide election? And I say, well, first of all, yes, we can, because if I'm not mistaken, historically, we gave this one dude whose name I think it's Barack. I think he won twice in Wisconsin. And I think Wisconsin came up because once you give them a message that makes sense, they will feel the passion. And when they feel that energy, they'll come out to the polls. They may not have come out in the last election, but once you have a cause and a candidate that they believe in, that is what is getting people motivated. And I want to make sure that the people in Dane County feel that same energy, just like those in Milwaukee, Kenosha, Racine, Barron County, St. Croix, all the other places I've been throughout the state, to give that same message.
Well, let me think about this for just a minute. Barack Obama, my memory serves, won 58 of 72 counties in the state of Wisconsin. And our pal, and I like Mandela Barnes a lot, I certainly voted for him, but he was outspent by $26 million by third-party spending.
Yes.
Everett, I'd like to think there'd be some campaign spending around your race, but you're not going to get outspent by $26 million. The negative campaigning had a big impact on our friend Mandela, I think. He didn't respond. He stayed positive. He stayed above the fray. If you were the recipient of negative campaigning, how would you respond?
I mean, I'm going to respond. And I think the thing I have is that I have a record to respond on. So I'm not going to let people attack my record or attack, you know, these falsities that they put out there and not have us respond. I think we have to respond. And I think, you know, Mandela was given and stood on certain values, and but they attacked him on things that he didn't have no control over. You know, he's not a judge, so he may not know how cash bail works, right? And he's not a police officer, so he may not be in control of crime. So what I've told my team consistently is, let's make sure we have a response for cash bail. Let's make sure we have a response for my local law enforcement so they don't try to come with the defund the police. Let's make sure that we're able to respond to the negative attacks and keep people focused on the record itself. You know, you have to do it in a crafty way within 30 seconds, but you do it in such a way because you have a proven track record to be able to run on to say, hey, these are things we've done in my leadership. This is success we've had, and we will continue to have that kind of success as your next Wisconsin Supreme Court justice. You have to respond.
Folks, you're listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Judge Everett Mitchell, candidate for Wisconsin Supreme Court. Judge, good to see you again. Thanks for coming around. I want to get a sense of your judicial philosophy, precedent, stare decisis. We've seen the Dobbs decision on Roe v. Wade. And of course, we're looking to get some progressives on the Wisconsin Supreme Court. But I'm wondering, how do you balance that? I'm concerned. I think a lot of people can be concerned about, well, if we just make this all about politics on the judicial side, they're basically just, you know, legislators. So if we flip a court, then they're going to go vote the other way. And, you know, where's the philosophy? Where's the consistency judicially in that? Everett, I just want to get your sense on that.
Well, I will say that just like there should be a separation between church and state, there has to be a separation between partisanship and justice. Like, we cannot allow partisanship. And any judge who is allowing a partisan party to dictate their decision should be disqualified from their position as a judge. When people come into our courtrooms, we shouldn't ask questions about whether or not you're Republican, you're Democrat, you're Independent, you're Green Party. It should be the facts of the case, individuals being treated and being given that level of respect. I don't ask people those questions when they come into my courtroom. I think a judicial philosophy that I've been consistent with is the idea of a living constitution. Now, a living constitution means that it should be able to speak to the evolving needs of the American public. And you should view the Constitution and read the Constitution in that way. And I think, you know, both as a black man, but also as a student of the law, I recognize the need for adding elements to the Constitution that did not exist when the founders framed it the first time, i.e. women being able to vote, i.e., you know, African-Americans being able to be participated, slavery, all those different, you know, from the 14th to the 7th Amendment, all of those different amendments that have given us this right, especially the 13th, with ended slavery in America. So that's my philosophy. I know we got to go to break.
Not yet.
We got some more time here yet, Everett. I just want to ask one more question before I pitch it back over to Crudy. Ethics is on the top of my mind these days. We see what's going on in the U.S. Supreme Court. Jenny Thomas, her husband sitting on the bench, of course, and not recusing. Very concerning that he's one vote against, you know, this case that involved his wife. And we have a similar situation here in the Wisconsin Supreme Court. There's no, as far as I know, they don't have to recuse if, you know, funders or donors come before them. Everett, what's your sense on what ethics should look like at the Wisconsin Supreme Court?
You know, unfortunately, there's really no, short of fast rule related to recusal, but I think when you can no longer objectively hear a case, I think you owe it to the the litigants as well as to the rule of law to recuse yourself. Because, you know, in putting yourself inside of a way you can no longer be objective really strips this sense that the law should be independent, and it should be you want independent minded individuals who will be able to look at the rule of law and make a reasoned decision based on whether it's the case law, constitution, precedent. If not precedent, then what are the facts of the law that allow for you to be able to move past precedent or overrule it? But that should be done from an objective perspective that is rooted in how the law is written and how you perceive it. If you can no longer do that, you owe it to the litigants and you owe it to the people to recuse yourself, because your perspective has already been tainted with the inability to really weigh the law in the manner in which it's supposed to be consistently weighed.
Folks, you are listening to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. I've got the Honorable Judge Everett Mitchell here with me in the Madison Studios, the Solidarity Realty Studios. Judge Mitchell, there's a number of potential issues that I worry could come before the court, but I've got to start at least broadly, and you stop me where you can't.
Okay.
Redistricting, sir. Here in the state of Wisconsin, and we've seen this go up to the U.S. Supreme Court and never really satisfactorily be answered, but it is my perception, and I've seen the math, that we have a very partisan gerrymander, and that is a legislative function currently. But at a certain point, it stops being representative of the people of the state of Wisconsin. There's a lot of hope, if there is a change in the court, that a case could come before the court. Mm-hmm. Would you think it appropriate for the court to hear a case, or is this a federal issue? Where do you see it? Could this be something that if you were elected to the court, you could see coming before the court, sir?
I think I can answer that question. Yes, I do see that sort of case coming before the court. I think a value for me is the value having access to voting and representation. I think the cases that we have seen, at least the ones that I'm most nervous about, is one that from North Carolina, where they have petitioned the Supreme Court to, you know, independent state legislator theory. This new theory that had not been really tested is now before the Supreme Court. And at least four or five of them seem to be given some leniency toward that. And just so your listeners know, that is a case of North Carolina where they are petitioning, the legislative is petitioning whether or not the Supreme Court can give check to the legislative decisions related to how voting is done inside their state. That, and they're putting a new theory that will definitely remove the Supreme Court's check and balance over the rules that the legislature puts in place for voting inside a particular state. To me, that is probably the most consequential voting case right now, because it will, if given that weight, it will basically give states that have minority rule through gerrymandering the ultimate check of power. Because then if you remove the court's supervision for that, it won't even matter if people elect progressive leaning justices to the court, because the Supreme Court would have said to them that that's not in the purview of, that's only, that power is regulated to the legislature and no longer to the supervision of their state courts.
Everett, broadly, should there be any limitations to the vote? What should the limitations be? Should it be, you've got to show a voter ID, which we know is the law of the land currently and the state law here in the state of Wisconsin. But it seems like a lot of the efforts that I see run out, especially by the Republican legislatures, they're contracting the availability and the ability of people to vote, sir. Broadly, where do you come down on this under Wisconsin or the U.S. Constitution? Should there be any parameters, any limitations to the vote, sir?
I've always advocated that as much of access to the voting process, people should be given that access. The limitation that we create in order to, you know, keep certain communities from being able to have access is what diminishes our voice in this community. We don't need to have a lot of the rules. I would say that the Supreme Court laws that have given, you know, from Shelby, that have given more of these opportunities. I think it was Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg who said the second generation, right, barriers to voting are going to be something that we will have to pay attention to, because they have all these voting laws, poll tax laws, whether it is felony disenfranchisement laws that have kept, you know, people, even as far as Florida, even though they overturned and voted to give the felons the right to vote, they still came back through courts and said, no, we got to put these poll taxes, or they got to pay these fees. There should be a removal of barriers so that people have access to the right to vote. But again, that goes back to whether or not people believe their voice and their vote even matters in the first place. And I think if we can give them that assurance that it does count, more people will participate in the democratic process.
He is Judge Everett Mitchell. We'll bring him back. I believe we're like 49 days from the primary. February 21st coming up in no time at all. More with the Devil's Advocates, more with Judge Everett Mitchell. Stick around. I know you will.
Occupy didn't start on Wall Street. It started on our street. The Devil's Advocates.
And we are back. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Make sure you check us out on the socials. Find us on Twitter at Devil Radio, on Facebook at The Devil's Advocates Radio, and of course the Civic Media app at all your app stores. Check it out and take it with you.
Dominic, we got a fine guest here in the Solidarity Realty Studios, Madison, Wisconsin. I've got the Honorable Judge Everett Mitchell. Judge, welcome back. Thanks for coming back around. And, you know, you never know who's listening that might have been listening or might not have been listening. So let's just start with a little bit of background. First and foremost, you're a family guy, correct?
Yeah, I have a family, a wife. I have a 17-year-old daughter and a 10-year-old son.
The 17-year-old daughter, is she trouble?
No, man, she the sweetest. She the sweetest to get out, man. She's actually a little gifted child. She started college early at the age of 16. So
wow.
I think she really enjoys college. She really enjoyed the kind of independent mind and thinking. And so it's been a wonderful fit for her.
I had to chase some boys off when my daughter was 17, so maybe I have a different experience, a different...
Hey, man, the basement is always ready. The basement is always ready.
Everett? You're also a man of God. Tell us a little bit about that, please.
Yeah, I'm a senior pastor of Christ of Solid Rock Church here in Madison, Wisconsin, the only open and affirming Black Baptist church. I'm the first Black Baptist pastor to marry a same-sex couple in our state. When I married two women who had been members of my congregation, and the ladies asked me, like, Pastor, would you marry us? And I said, yes, I'll marry you. Yeah, I've been together 42 years. I don't know many straight people that's been together 42 years.
Right.
So, you know, so I married them, not on the state, not on the steps of the Capitol. I wanted to marry them in the church. And I think that has given my church a little leadership in this community to show that if we're going to be about justice, justice means everybody, not just for a selected few people. And I've been in ministry since the age of 15 years old. So over 30 years, really working hard to, you know, try to live out this idea that faith is really about justice and fairness, how you treat people, how you see people. And I apply that that is the lens in which I view the world. It doesn't dictate how I am as a judge, but it dictates my heart, so that I have a heart for people and then try to use that heart and love to shape the way I treat individuals in my courtroom and the way I, you know, show empathy for the victims who've been hurt and who've been harmed. And I know a lot about being victimized and being in pain. So I'm always in that present space with people because I know what it feels like to be unheard when you've been hurt for a long time.
Everett, I perceive myself to be a Christian. When you talk about separation of church and state, you know, I internally know how I think I do it, but how do you do it, sir?
So, you know, my religious beliefs do not, you know, insert themselves into how I see the law. So, you know, when you're looking at a case, whether it's about real estate or family case, you know, examining, you know, criminal cases, you know, how I interpret scripture does not infuse itself into or dictate. I think there's, you know, some bad judges who have done things that blend that line. And I think it really does cause a level of integrity to hit the court. So, you know, they, you know, the idea of the Establishment Clause really was meant to make sure that no religious institution was dictating how courts behave. And I think that that has to be the case. It doesn't mean that people can't have faith. I mean, you have Catholics, you have people who follow, you know, the Hebrew Bible, all who are great leaders and jurists. And yet at the same time, when you come to the law, you know, you want to come to the law as it is written and not letting the scripture dictate what you are, but letting the law guide you, but also letting your values be reflected in the discretion that you have before people. So, you know, when you how you treat people is not in the law. So, you know, me calling people by their names rather than just saying defendant or, you know, juvenile delinquent. How about his name is Tyreek? Tyreek, how can we help you? And then Ms. Wilson, how can we make sure, or, you know, acknowledging men and women who are in my courtroom with a level of dignity and respect so that they recognize that the court doesn't have to be the most traumatized place in their life. That when I, you know, because I have to live in this community. And so when I do a ruling, I want to make sure the ruling that I do allows for me to walk in this community with a sense of pride and not scared of it at the same time.
Folks, you're listening to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Judge Everett Mitchell joining us for just a few more minutes. Judge, thank you for that. I want to get your sense of you know, a lot of Republicans, conservatives, religious folks talk about religious freedom, not wanting to, you know, bake a cake for a gay couple, those kinds of things. I'm not the believer, Everett, and I think a lot of people hide behind religion to justify their bigotry. What's your sense of what does religious freedom mean to you?
I mean, religious freedom just means choice. It just means being able to have choice. And yet at the same time, we have to ask ourselves, what religion are we putting before people to say we want to exercise that choice? And I think any time that people want to extract and use Christian principles, to your point, to hide bigotry, it is a reminder of the evil that has come as a result of that. I mean, I'm a black man whose ancestors were ripped and abused because they tried to use religion as a gate. We have anti-Semitic people running around here talking about the ways in which the Jewish community and the Holocaust was, you know, was a myth. Because they're using some, you know, brainwashed version of religion to justify hurting people. That's not religion. That's not choice. That is abuse. That is harmful and that is hurtful. And we should not be putting that on God or anybody else. That is human choice to hurt people. And you can't use God to justify that oppression.
But from a judicial standpoint, should people be allowed to segregate how they do their business, for example, based on what they perceive someone else's religion to be or whatever their sexual preferences to be?
I would say that as a value system, I don't believe that that is appropriate. I think the, you know, if you're going to serve, everybody should be treated the same. You know, there should be no distinguishing priorities between the two. And I continue to live out those values both as a pastor and leader in our community, that there is no difference for me. And we should make sure we follow and lead in that example so that the next generation coming behind us is more just and equitable than the one that we have before us.
Everett Mitchell, a judge and a Wisconsin Supreme Court candidate. I got one last question, but before I get there, if people want to support your campaign, how can they do so, sir?
Yes, you can go to my website, Judge Mitchell for Justice, judgemitchellforjustice.com, and sign up to be a volunteer or an endorser. If there are ways to, you know, send this message out, we can meet and greets in our community. There's a, you know, ways that you can donate and support. So just go to the website, find out different ways, contact us. I'll show up. And I think it's important for me to show up so that you can ask me questions and touch and know that I'm real and not be afraid. I think the thing we're trying to preempt is this idea of fear. And I don't think there's anything that you need to be afraid of in our campaign or in my leadership here.
Well, Judge Mitchell, I'll be quite candid. I judge a man by what sporting teams he roots for. So what team you rooting for this Sunday, sir?
Oh, man. Right, what team am I rooting for this Sunday? I'm going to do a little Dallas Cowboys and Aaron Rodgers at the same time. I told you last time, man. Aaron Rodgers is like I don't care what people say about the dude. The dude is like a magician. How are you going to bring the Packers back from almost non-existence to be able to have a playoff break? This dude, it's just crazy, man. It's just crazy. It's amazing. So
my friend Dominic is a Detroit friend. You want to talk about crazy? He's been cheering for like 30 years.
Want to talk about faith? Be a Detroit fan. We'll tell you all about it.
Ever since Barry Sanders, man, I know y'all.
Calvin Johnson.
You know, he had to, you know.
Megatron. Judge Everett Mitchell, thank you so much for joining us here on the Devil's Advocates. We'll have you back real soon. More The Happier Happy Hour is next.
Thank you.
You done messed up, A.A. Ron!
Good luck. We're all counting on you.